was actually in March of 2015, so about 4 years after diagnosis. She came in on routine follow-up exam, and I always tell patients when I examine people, I do their supraclave nodes, they're facing the wall, they're facing away from me, and I feel their neck, and it's like, that's when I make my faces, because when I feel that supraclave node, you know something's wrong. And she had a new left supraclavicular node that was on exam. She got an ultrasound done the same day that actually showed two lymph nodes measuring 4 millimeters and 5 millimeters. She went for biopsy with the radiologist, and the first biopsy was negative. And so, I mean, I knew something was there, so we needed more tissue.
Was the biopsy of a node?
Yeah, it was an FNA that they did of the supraclave node, and it was negative.
Why would you said a radiologist is doing
the interventional radiologist.
Why would they do it rather than a surgeon?
The breast surgeons wouldn't do the neck, and you know the ENT surgeon, I don't know if she had seen one at that point, but our breast surgeons won't do a neck node.
We have a problem with that too. We have to get an FNA of neck nodes because they're afraid of all the vessels here. So
wow,
we struggle with the same thing. I send them to ENT to do actually excisional biopsy if that's all I have.
And that's what I do now. But as we restaged her, we also found that she had bone mets. So I got to another interventional radiologist who I, you know, explained the situation. He went in and biopsied both the neck with the core biopsy and the bone, a T10 biopsy, and she had invasive pleomorphic breast cancer.
And at that point, she was on adjuvant tamoxifen?
Well, she had been on adjuvant tamoxifen at the time of the diagnosis of the recurrent supraclavicular node.
And do you think she was taking it?
Yeah. No, I think she was. And the lobular cancer was pleomorphic with signet ring features. It was still ERPR positive. HER2 IHC was equivocal, but the FISH was 1.1. So we decided at that point to go with the BSO because I don't know that we were 100% sure that she was fully postmenopausal. And I'm really concerned about that with aromatase inhibitors. And at the time of BSO, they found some peritoneal metastases as well. Within a month, she got started on letrozole and palbociclib, and she's been in a sustained response now for 2 years. She's moved out of the area at the last follow-up in her other location. She's still having a response. She started at 125 milligrams daily. She's had to ratchet down to 100 because her white counts were hovering in that 1,000 range a lot of the time, and her ANCs were low. Her major toxicity is fatigue. She is living a very full life. She's putting up with all the side effects. The vaginal dryness is still an issue, and she's being evaluated for that at her new location again. She started on zoledronic acid, and she's in a sustained response right now.
So we talked before about the issue of indications for and choice of a CDK inhibitor. Sarah, what about the patient who relapses on adjuvant therapy? And of course, the more common situation is an AI.
Yeah, had she relapsed on an AI, the recommendation I would provide is fulvestrant palbociclib. At this point, that's the only CDK4/6 inhibitor we have that would suit her based on the clinical trial, the Paloma 3 clinical trial. However, George has presented the Monarch 2 data, and we anticipate that abemaciclib will soon be available to us as well in combination with fulvestrant.